I'll make a very short position of why we started all this work with Thierry many years ago. Then Thierry has prepared a set of slides to position the question of metabolic stress and redox. And then we have a few speakers. Arne gave a talk this morning. Was everyone attending Arne's talk this morning? Or everyone was here? No. So maybe Arne, if you'll be able to give it again, or at least part of it. I'm sure we'll learn more from the second rehearsal. And then we have Anthony, Marcia, Alain. And then after that, we'll have a discussion. So the presentation will be taped. The discussion won't be taped. So if I guess she asked approval for the presentation being taped, and nobody has problem with that. Yeah. Okay. Good. So I'll start. So everything started 20 plus years ago when we were wondering at the clinical level only why the cones do degenerate in retinitis pigmentosa. So just as a reminder, in patients affected with retinitis pigmentosa, they start by losing dark adapted vision, which means that they have problems at the end of the day at twilight, and they have problems to adjust to changes of light. And eventually, over years, they start to have a shrinking of the visual field. They have what we call tunnel vision, and this tunnel becomes narrower and narrower, and over the years it becomes a point, and eventually people become blind. In the late 80s, actually 1989, the first gene was identified in retinitis pigmentosa, and since over the past 25 years, more than 58 genes have been identified in retinitis pigmentosa, and in genetic diseases of a retina, it's more than 300 genes which have been identified. So it's a very complex disorder. And the surprise came as a clinician because the first mutation which was identified was on rhodopsin, which is the visual pigment expressed at the level of rod photoreceptors. And actually, many of the genes which were identified since are expressed in rod photoreceptors. Rod photoreceptors are responsible for night vision. They are not important at all for light-adapted vision. Not at all. Actually, we had a paper with Botton-Rosca about a crosstalk between the two photoreceptors. But altogether, to stay simplistic, they are not so important for night-adapted vision. So the question is, why do patients lose the cones? Why do they lose day vision? Why do they lose central vision? And this matters a lot for patients because it means that if we can understand why this occurs, besides the fact that there is no mutation that can induce cone degeneration, so in some cases there are mutations, but in most cases there are none. So we focused on trying to understand why the cones degenerate. So it's not the cause of a disease, it's the key event leading to blindness. And this is very relevant because given the number of mutations which were identified in rod photoreceptors and sometimes in cones, trying to do gene therapy on all these families with all the mechanisms is going to be a daunting task and probably won't be achieved in all patients, although it's still a very important avenue for research. So we try to think about what could be the way to address this disease. Gene therapy, as I said, is a possibility. This is what we're going to talk today, which is the link between rod degeneration and cone degeneration. And of course, I will, in the next seminars at Collège de France, I will deal with the other approaches, which are restoring vision when you have lost everything. So the rods are important only for night-adapted vision, and the cones, they start to function at very low levels of light. In this room, we are only using our cones, and most often we use only our cones. So preserving the cones would mean a lot to preserve central vision and light-adapted vision in patients. The cones are driving most of the visual responses in the retina, and the rods are actually piggybacking on them. So it means that the cones are central, although they are a minority, less than 5% of the cells, because they are located in the center of the retina and they are responsible for light-adapted vision even in the periphery. Because the physiology of the retina is relying a lot on the cones, preserving the cones means a lot. And actually, this was emphasized years ago by Paul Sieving, the current director of the National Eye Institute, who said that doing psychophysics in patients with a genetic disorder of the retina, he showed that you can lose 50% of the cones and retain normal acuity. And you could lose 95% of the cone and still be able to move and to detect objects, which means you are not blind. And if you could transform the disease into another condition where patients don't have dark adapted vision, but they have normal light adapted vision. This is a condition called congenital stationary night blindness. I won't get into that. You would not cure the disease, but you would make patients live with a disease they don't care about. Actually, most of the patients who don't have dark adapted vision currently, because we live in very lighted environment, they don't even notice it. They don't even know that they don't have a night adapted function. So when we started to investigate, one, the cones degenerate while the mutation is expressed on the underodes, I listed, this is a very old slide, many hypotheses. And one is true, but only at early stages, which is toxic byproducts. Rods release toxic, actually, transmitters and maybe other things. But this is only a phenomenon occurring very early in the disease and not relevant in clinical practice. There are other possibilities, like loss of structural support, loss of glial support or pigment epithelium support, changes in connectivity, and other hypotheses which actually are merging with what we are going to discuss today, which actually happened after we started to work on it and actually are merging. And what we have been working on for the past 20 years is trophic intertorque between rods and cones and the signaling between rods and cones. So what we demonstrated doing transplantation studies and the co-culture, which I described this morning, is that it's very likely, at that point it was likely, that the rods would make, or the retina when rods are alive would make a protein called rod-derived cone viability factor. This is the name we gave it at that time. And the rod-derived cone viability factor would be important for the maintenance of the cones. So when the rods degenerate, the factor is lost, and then the cones eventually degenerate. So this is a very simple hypothesis. And all the studies, the cell biology and the transplantation studies we did 20 years ago, demonstrated that quite clearly. But all of this is published. Then with Thierry, we started in 97 to try to identify the protein, the signal. And this led to the cloning of RDCVF in 2001 and the validation took a few years. And it was published in 2004. And given the function of RDCVF, which we are going to discuss today, the hypothesis we have is that when the rods degenerate, the remaining cones are exposed to all the light coming through the retina, which is not absorbed anymore by the rods. All the oxygen which is made by the core, which is meant for the rods, which again are representing 97% of the cells. And this amount of oxygen is huge because this is the highest metabolic demand in all the body by gram of tissue. So all the oxygen is released for the cones which are remaining. So they are exposed to a lot of light, a lot of oxygen, more than they can need, certainly. And they lose protection by RDCVF. So they lose protection against stress and they are stressed and they die. When we put back the factor, and we did that in many animal models, so this is in a mutant rat, you restore significant function and you restore the number of photoreceptors but to a lesser degree. And this is due to the fact that the factor is controlling the length of the outer segment, the part of photoreceptors that absorb light. When we did that in another model, and this is work conducted in partnership with Berkeley, and Dennis was there at that time, factor is able to restore some of the function, which you can measure, a significant, at least 50%, and the density of the photoreceptors in the treated retina versus the control is very high. So this is both a morphological and a functional rescue. And Thierry was able to, in his group, to study the function at a behavioral level. And he showed me how this is done this morning. And it looks like you can really delay the loss of vision by many years, probably more than 10 years, maybe 40 years, we'll see. But at least this is very significant, which means that if what we observe in the animal model and behaviorally is true, treating with this factor would delay blindness by many, many years, probably beyond the lifespan of the patient. So it would more or less cure the disease. The nice thing, it would be independent from mutation, and it can be done even late in the disease when patients still have remaining vision. So this is why we believe it's a very important target. But the fact that when we worked on the mechanism, so this is the clinical hypothesis, loss of rods, loss of a factor, loss of the outer segment of cones, and this had been summarized in several reviews we wrote together with Thierry. And eventually, we are preparing a clinical trial to prove that it's going to work in patients, because we have done everything that can be done on animal models. So now it's time to move to patients. And we are doing that in partnership with a huge, a very big US foundation, which is helping us to do that, and some entities in France too. And what we are targeting is patients who lost part of the photoreceptors. They still have photoreceptors, but they lost part of the outer segment. In this patient, there is a thinning of the outer segment. And we can measure that. There is another technology, which is adaptive optics, derived from astronomy, where we can visualize in the eyes of the patient. Both the techniques I'm showing, the one here and this one, are done in infrared light in patients in 1 minute, so they don't get blurred. It's a non-invasive technique, and we get a very good mapping of a retina. We can quantify the number of cone photoreceptors in the retina of the patients, and we can quantify the length of the outer segment. So this way, it's a good way to know how many cells are still there, what is the volume, and eventually to measure the impact of a treatment in these patients. So we are preparing this trial. This is an example of a patient that could be targeted. This patient has a very short outer segment, but still remaining outer segment. And this is the map of cone photoreceptors in this patient. As you can compare to the previous image, there are a lot of cones which are already dead, but we still have many cones remaining to preserve. And this patient has 20/60 vision, which means that this patient can read, can do many things. So if we can just keep that, this is very good for this patient. And the trial which is planned is first a safety trial, then an efficacy trial. So it's hopefully will start next year. And it will take us a few years to demonstrate. But if this works, it will make a big change in the treatment of these patients. And it may have some relevance for age-related macular degeneration, because in age-related macular degeneration, the earliest event that was demonstrated both at the psychophysical level but also at the morphological level on post-mortem studies is the loss of rods around the center of the retina. And there are now many more evidences that this could be a very important mechanism in age-related macular degeneration. But since there are no animal models of age-related macular degeneration, there is no animal that has this disease, we cannot test the hypothesis in animals. We can only test it in patients. This is why we first will try the treatment in RP patients, retinitis pigmentosa patients. And if it works and it's safe, then we move on to age-related macular degeneration. But probably beyond my retirement age, so it will be another story. So this was just to introduce for the people who couldn't attend this morning, and I think Thierry has prepared an introductory talk which is more focusing on the topic of this afternoon, so I'll put Thierry's talk on the screen.